And welcome back to the Visual Studio 2013 Launch Edition of Channel 9 Live. I'm Brian Keller. Once again, I'm joined with my good friend and colleague, Aaron Bjork. I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself again, and then we'll talk about this fresh face.
So it's good to be here again. I think we were just doing this, but I'm Aaron Bjork. I'm a PM lead working on Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio Online.
Great.
My name is Greg Boer. I'm a program manager also. Work on all the agile planning tools, work item tracking stuff, and in Team Foundation Server.
That's great. Well, let's actually catch up on a little bit of our backlog of questions, because since you left us this morning, and we've actually had a lot more questions related to Visual Studio Online. Sure. And the first question is, how do you actually migrate? So let's say somebody is doing, you know, on-premises development with Team Foundation Server today, and they want to move to the cloud, or maybe you want to move back later because you realize the cloud's not for you. What's our story there?
Yeah, so you're going to start me off with one of those. It's on our backlog questions.
Yes, I will.
we'd love to have a better import story, but we do have sort of what we call like tip migration. Obviously, you can take your source directly there. You can take work items and using our Excel integration, import them directly into the service and do things like that. And then we're working on both import and export items as well. So those are both on our backlog. We hope to have a great export experience actually in the next few months.
Okay, great. So. And I also know a third party called OpsHub today released that they have integration between Visual Studio Online and on-premises Team Foundation Server,
yep.
right? I don't know if there's anything else to add to
that. One
of
our gold partners, check them out. They do a bunch of great stuff in the integration space.
Fantastic. Now, Greg, one of the things that we saw in the keynote this morning was this new capability called portfolio management. Mm-hmm. What is portfolio management? How does it build on what we've kind of been using from Team Foundation Server, Agile Planning in the past? How should we think about this capability?
Sure, yeah. So the way I look at it is in the prior release, we created some good tools for the team to use. Like a team could have their backlog, a team could plan their sprint, a team could use a task board to manage the work.
Like a scrum team would, right?
Exactly, yeah. right? And really what we wanted to provide tools for teams to be autonomous and manage their work. But what we didn't have and what we're adding in 2013 is the ability to have visibility above the team. So imagine you have several of these really efficient scrum teams working. How are they contributing to a common goal, for example? So we provide a way for you to map the work on a team to a common set of goals, and then you can see, hey, I have this goal, which teams are working with it, what's the progress on it, and so forth. I would say our goal is like teams can continue to work the way they work, they can continue to be autonomous, and then we still get that without sacrificing the visibility up.
Right, and so one of the things that that I think I found is really important for people to understand is that when you're taking advantage of this portfolio view, you need to have everybody working in the same team project, mm-hmm. right?
That's right.
What's your guidance you would give to teams as they start to embrace this model?
I would say just exactly that. That's what we do. We're a very large organization, and we have all of our stuff in one team project, which allows us to have this traceability going up. There are ways to make it work if you're in multiple projects, because we know there are customers that have that. But the best solution is to have everything in one team project for your work item tracking.
And then you create multiple teams, right?
Yes.
And those teams get mapped to an individual area path for work items.
Exactly.
And on the source control side, I imagine you can permission them for a particular
for sure.
branch.
Yeah. Teams are the way to do it. You have a team project, you can break it up into teams. Teams get their own backlog. There's actually a security group assigned to a team, which you can then use to secure other areas of TFS,
sure.
like source and so forth. So.
Okay. And one of the things that we showed in the keynote this morning is how, even though you're kind of putting everybody into the same team project, you can still customize parts of what you're doing. What are my options there?
Sure. So like with the teams, it's their hub. We want to make it their collaborative hub. So you get a team room by default with mm-hmm. a team. You have a home page of which you can customize and add charts to that home page, which are interesting to the team. You can customize what your Kanban board looks like, for example. So each team has control over their Kanban board. The way Kanban works is that it's, you define what your flow is going to be, and that's very personal to the team. So every team can define what columns appear on their Kanban board, but they still get roll-up across the teams as well. A couple other things would be like tagging. We have lightweight tagging with work items where anybody can just add a tag to a work item and then filter by that tag, and eventually we're going to be adding querying on those tags as well.
All right, that's great. And so so querying, the ability for you to go into other views outside of the backlog view and still understand
exactly.
how those tags work. Mm-hmm. What about the ability for me to report on things like the substates that you're creating within Kanban? And that's another one I get asked about a lot.
Yeah, that's a very good question. Right now we have these, when you create a column on a board, you map that to a state, so it sort of becomes a sub-state for that specific team. We are working to add the ability to query on that column as well and also view it on the form. It's not there today, but we know people want that. It's an important field to them, so we're going to add that functionality as well.
Okay. Here's a great question from Pat. Any plans to provide us with a way for splitting a product backlog item, or I suppose it could be a requirement or, you know, really any work item type, into smaller ones when you realize it's too big to be managed by a single team? What would you tell teams to do there?
Yeah, I don't think it's a great question, and it's a common scenario. It's something that we put these into sometimes these categories, and this is one of those things that I think we'd love to go do. We're just trying to take care of some of the other things first. Mm-hmm. So we call these small rocks, and they're things that we're trying to find ways we can squeeze them in. It's definitely a candidate item. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but I imagine if you wanted to track work that was being done across multiple teams, you could always do that at the feature level,
correct?
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then allow the teams to roll up to that.
I think that's one of the benefits of the, you know, we were talking about the portfolio backlogs, is you get a coarser grained backlog, essentially, and then you can break that coarser grained backlog into appropriate level, whether you're using user stories, PBIs, requirements, we don't care. Mm-hmm. And at the finer grain level, then teams can sort of, you know, manage the work as they see fit, but you still get that roll up to this coarser grained item. And out of the box in all of our templates, we included a work item type called feature. Mm-hmm. And that allows you to do that sort of out of the box. For on-premises, you can customize that. You can add additional layers. Internally, we have 4 layers, for example, on our internal Team Foundation server. So we've got scenario at the highest level, then we break those down into experiences, then user stories and tasks.
Great. And so that actually, what you just said, plays really well into a question John's asking. So are feature work items available in all team projects?
Yeah. All team projects and all templates.
And so if you're upgrading from 2012, where we didn't have the notion of feature, what's your experience look like there?
Yeah, if you want to do that, then you can go ahead and run an enablement, which will add feature to an existing team project. Or if you create a new team project, you'll get, of course, the feature work item in the new team project as well.
Okay, great. So Raj is asking a question here about migration. So I don't know if you guys can help us with this one, but he's asking what the story would be for migrating from TFS 2010 over to 2013. And I wonder if he really means migration or upgrade here.
Yeah, so upgrade, I would just say, not a problem. You just mm-hmm. do it. So we've worked really hard at upgrade to make sure that it's sort of non-destructive, non-disruptive, and it's going to work. And it will, you know, so I think you can go ahead and do the upgrade. If we're talking about migration, a lot of times people ask questions about migrating between process templates. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we don't have sort of turnkey solutions for. We've got partners that help in that space. You can certainly crack open the work items and do some of the modifications yourself.
Sure.
But you can migrate work as around that way as well.
So. Yeah, one of the things I always try to recommend to customers as they start to customize the process template in the world of the on-premises Team Foundation server is treat that like any other software project, right? Document it, make sure you're versioning everything, checking that in, because you never know, Microsoft could come out with some new process template in the future, and you need to go back and be able to replay your changes on top of that, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and one of the things, I guess, just building on that too, that we've worked really hard at for the last few releases is making sure that a lot of this new, you know, agile functionality, whether it's backlogs or Kanban right. boards or tags or whatnot, it just works when you upgrade. We've got, Greg alluded to it, sort of this enablement wizard where you can go through and do the appropriate mappings, but you're not having to go through any of these sort of difficult steps or migration steps to turn that stuff on. It's just there for you.
That's great.
And we want it to continue to work just like that.
Yeah. So Greg, here's a question for you. Method Maven is asking what improvements have been made to Kanban. I guess the follow-up question would be since when,
sure.
because there's
yeah.
always new changes right. happening. But bring us through kind of the history of Kanban with you.
Sure.
If you could.
I mean, when we first released Kanban, it was based off the state model of the work items. There wasn't much opportunity to change the columns if you wanted it. What we've done since then, we've allowed you to now, every team gets their own Kanban board, basically. And then they map to a state model. So they get both the autonomy of the team, yet they still roll up to a common state model. The things that we are, so that's where I brought you up to speed today. Mm-hmm. What we'd like to do, the big things we want to do in the future, what customers want is horizontal swim lanes. So I want an expedite lane, and then I want my normal work lane, possibly. that we're working to add as well. And then also being able to take the columns that we have and splitting them into a doing done subcolumn, which means like, okay, I'm actively working in this column. I'm done with this column. It's ready to go to the next one, but they don't have the capacity yet. So it's just kind of hanging out there. So those are the two big things that we're looking to add soon, as well as being able to query on this new field that we've added.
Great.
Yeah, some
great.
People call those like a queued column as well. Yeah. And then another queued. Thing that Greg didn't mention is we have WIP limits or work in process limits for each of those columns. So for each column that you define, you can set a numeric value for, you know, how many items do you want to let into this column before we sort of visually flag it for you. And we don't stop you. You know, if you have a you have it set to 5 and you move 6 things in there, we're going to let you move the 6th thing, but we turn the column red and we sort of highlight for you that you're probably creating a flow problem for yourself at this point. And that's the whole point of Kanban, is to visually be able to see that stuff.
Right. There's a couple of analogies I like to use with customers, which is if I gave you 3 basketballs and asked you to shoot those into the hoop, you wouldn't just try to grab all 3 and push them up there. Yeah. You take one at a time, right? And Kanban's the same way about limiting that flow.
That's good. I'm going to use that.
Yeah, go for it. Go for it. I stole it from my friend Jeff Wilson, so credit to him.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate that.
So Mike Billington, he's saying, are there any limitations to adding your own work item types, difficulties with upgrades and that sort of thing? So I have to imagine he's asking about the on-premises version of Team Foundation Server. Mm-hmm. Here's one that I get, actually, which is, what if somebody to 2012 had added a feature work item type? Mm-hmm. Not too crazy to think that that may have happened. What happens when our upgrade enablement tries to do the same thing?
Yeah, so the end result is we've made all of our Agile tooling, the Agile portfolio management, the Agile planning tooling, can be configured to work with any process template. We actually, internally, we had that exact issue, is that we had scenario experience and story work items already existed before we added the new features to our internal server. And you can go back and wire them up. So if they have a feature work item, they can go back and modify the settings to wire up the feature backlog to their feature work item, and then there it's all there for them. So that is possible. Now that we have this, Aaron mentioned, we have this configure, which will automatically configure your features for you. That will work if it recognizes your process template as one that we've shipped and it's close enough, then we will do the work for you. If it doesn't, it says, look, we can't do this, and it points you to an article to do it yourself. It's not hard. It's some XML that you need to import, and you just basically say, these are the work items that represent features, and we take it from there.
Great. Good to know. Well, I guess it wouldn't be a TFS launch without this question. Johnson's asking, can we upgrade from Visual Source Safe, which of course, we have shipped converters for Visual Source Safe for several years, so that's available in the box with TFS, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So we can help you upgrade there. Mm-hmm. So Jamie is asking this question. It's kind of a follow-on to what we were asking earlier, Aaron. So any plans to expose the APIs within the Team Web Access so that customizations can be made to that experience or to consume the data from TFS, maybe within Visual Studio Online? So what are my extensibility options today?
Yeah, so I think let's start with the data. And like I said earlier, we're working on REST APIs, essentially, that'll allow you to interact with that data. We're working on OData feeds and things like that. So we're starting there. Extensibility within the web framework itself, we're doing some little bits and pieces there. I don't think I have anything to share in terms of a big plan there yet, but it's something we hear from customers a lot, and we're listening, but we don't have any announcements to make about sort of the web extensibility yet.
Okay. But today, if I wanted to interact with the data that's on the web, I can, or the data that's in TFS, whether that's on Visual Studio Online or TFS, I can use the TFS object model. Yep. We've got OData support.
We've got OData support, which you know well.
Yes, that's right. So. A shameless plug there for a project I got to work on. So here's an easy question for you, Greg. Pat is asking, will it be possible to show the new charts in the project's homepage?
And the answer is yes. In fact, last Friday we released that on the service, the hosted service, so that functionality is there. You can go to a query, create a chart, pin it to your homepage, and it shows there. It's not in the on-premise product that we just are launching today, but with the next update, it will be there.
That's great. Yeah. And I can also, what else can I do with those charts? I can create my own dashboard that's available on the web. Mm-hmm. I can easily copy and paste and email those as daily summary. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those charts are, you can take them all, if you've seen any of the demos, like you can choose any kind of visualizations that you want. Essentially, it's a two-step process. What's the data? And it's just simply building a query to get your data, and then you decide how we want to visualize it and pivot it, like what Nicole was demoing earlier this morning. And then you can just pin it to your home page, and you can send links to them. Yeah, it's quite shareable.
That's great. I love the customizations you can do to the homepage. It's looking really nice these days. So Bart is asking a question, which we may need 45 minutes more to talk about. But is there a quick answer to this one? What is the best way to manage multiple releases for multiple semi and non-related projects, which are all maintained by the same team?
Yeah, let's see. Bart, my Twitter handle is at Aaron Bjork. Get in touch with me, and we should take that one
sure.
offline. I don't think I can answer that in here.
Probably at least one place to start would be the branching and merging guidance that's out there on CodePlex.
Sure.
But yeah, I can imagine there's I've had half-day conversations with customers about this.
There's all aspects. There's planning the work aspect. Yeah. There's the managing your code aspect of it. It's pretty,
Yeah, but I'm serious, Bart. Get in touch with me, and we can talk offline.
In 140 characters or less.
That's
back
right.
And forth.
Yeah.
Nice.
Exactly.
So Dan is asking here, when you add those custom swim lanes to a Kanban column, can you tie the burndown metrics to any of those swim lanes? So, for example, done would be the third column, and the fourth column would be a test regression column, complete column. Be able to report on those individual substates at all?
So when we add the substates is the question?
Sure.
With the existing substates.
With the existing states, what we have is we have an existing CFD chart, a cumulative flow diagram chart that is based on the columns that you have.
So the major columns or the sub-columns?
The sub-columns. When you
it
say
is.
Sub-columns, I'm referring to the team Kanban columns that they pick.
Customized.
The CFD chart is based off of that already.
Okay.
Yeah, so you'll see when you go add those columns, you actually see new sort of layers appear in your CFD from the point in time in which you added them.
That's right.
Okay.
And we've got some things on the backlog there, some small improvements with the CFD. We're going to give you configurable dates on the CFD.
That's right.
And some
that's
stuff
coming
like
soon.
That. So you'll start to see some of that stuff trickle out on Visual Studio Online.
Great. So speaking of your backlog, Aaron, this question is going to haunt you until you implement this, I know. Can you integrate an on-premises Team Foundation server implementation with SharePoint Online?
Yeah, so the answer is no. Right
okay.
Now. Yeah, we don't have any out-of-the-box support for that.
Got it. This is called Aaron's job security.
Yeah.
So any plans to expose or expand on the Kanban WIT extension? I'm not sure what's
Yeah, I can speak to that. So I wrote an article online called Kanban Under the Hood. You could probably bing it and find it. So yes, we are expanding on that. We're looking at ways to allow customers to add custom fields using that new model. So that if I want to create a new field, I can just add it so that I'm not modifying the core process that everyone else is using. I'm really adding a field for myself, which is going to allow us in the future to do things like upgrade your process from release to release. So yes, we built that thing as a way to modernize our platform to take us into the future.
Great.
For sure.
Great. That sounds really high tech. into the future and beyond. So so Troy's asking here, actually, I'm surprised we didn't get this question earlier. Any new changes to requirements management within TFS 2013?
Yeah, there's nothing I don't think really new in 2013 with regards to requirements management. We've got some great partners that fill this space, and we continue to rely on them. We've got our storyboarding tool, which is a great sort of lightweight way to document requirements. And I think the portfolio backlogs, while it's not requirements management, it does sort of give you a coarser grained view of the backlog that, you know, I think starts to trickle into the requirements management space a bit. So I'd check that out for sure.
Yeah, and certainly when we think of partners, there's a lot of great ones out there. EDEV is probably the one that I see the most traction around, and they actually just released a new version of their tooling, which builds on top of Team Foundation Server. So they've got some really lightweight, agile ways of managing your requirements, whether that's in Word or Visio, and really just building kind of that office suite right on top of TFS, which is really, really nice. So Aaron, I know you've done some talks in the past about how our internal teams adopt our own, you know, dog food our own technologies, right? So for people that haven't seen these presentations, and you can go watch them on the events tab of Channel 9, are there any key takeaways you've learned as we kind of adopt these toolings ourselves?
Yeah, maybe I'll just give you a couple of just thoughts that come to mind. Yeah, for those that maybe aren't familiar, we work on a three-week cadence, so we've talked about how we update the service every 3 weeks, and that essentially matches our sprint schedule, our execution schedule. For this release, for 2013, we actually had our entire division working on a three-week cadence, so that was something new. A couple of key learnings, I think, for me is, one, have one sprint cadence, you know, align your sprint boundaries. I talked to a lot of teams that, and we actually looked at how to do this in the tooling, you know, well, what if I've got one team that's doing four-week sprints and 1 week that's doing 2 week sprints, and it really leads to chaos. I think you need sort of one schedule to rule them all. We do have teams that actually take a 3 week sprint and break that down into a bunch of 1 week sprints, But we think in terms of a three-week cadence.
So when I say sprint 33, we all know what we're talking about.
Exactly, right. Yeah. Right. You don't want to have to be, is that sprint 33, you know, dot two, right. Or is that my sprint 33? And
yeah.
It's funny because we are in the midst of sprint 57. That's our sprint. We've just numbered ours, and we started with, I can still remember sprint one.
Yeah.
It wasn't very successful, but we've been learning as we go. Another key thing I think that we've learned is that we never stop sprinting. So we used to break our bigger schedule down into sprints, and then we'd sprint for four or five sprints, and then we'd take a break, and we'd have this
stabilization phase.
Right. Yeah, Greg's actually written some great articles on this, but it doesn't do anything good. All we ended up with was a lot of bug debt. When we went and talked to team members, they actually tell us just stop doing that. Like,
right.
Just let us manage our bug debt and let us keep sprinting. So. We just continually run on this three-week cadence now forever. And I don't know when we would ever break from that, but I think it's been really, really helpful for
us. So I love what you guys have done to your workspace, like your physical workspace. For those of you that haven't visited the Microsoft campus, if you ever come by, Building 18 is where most of your team works.
Yeah, look us up.
You're in these shared team rooms now. It seems like a really great place, a great environment to work. I have to ask, I've walked by, I've seen you guys using the task boards to actually track your work, but when you're in these physical team rooms, do you still use the new team room capability to actually communicate with one another, or is that kind of redundant?
Yeah, I think it depends team to team.
Some teams are actually, they keep it up as like a feed. Every one of the team rooms that we have, they're done very nicely actually, have a big screen, 100-inch screen TV, and sometimes they'll just leave the team room chat up on that screen. And it's just kind of rolling by and stuff, and it becomes a way of just sharing stuff, and it works well. It's a culture thing. Some teams, everyone decides what they want to do. Don't do it so much, but certainly, like you'll see task boards on these walls, Kanban boards on these big screens as well. It's been a nice move. I've really, really enjoyed moving to the team room environment.
Nice. Yeah.
One thing I'll say too about our team room feature in the product too is that. It's so much more than just chat. Like a lot of people look at it and just go, it's just a chat room. And it's not. It's really sort of a durable archive of activity. Mm-hmm. So when you're making changes to work items, they show up there. When you're checking something in, when builds are failing. And so it becomes this running log of what's going on in the team. And what I find is that teams go to it to kind of catch up. Even if you stepped out for a day or a couple hours, you pop back in and you see what's happened. And that leads to all the good conversations and the right conversations. And whether you're in then a physical team room or a virtual team room, you can have the conversation. But I found it very useful.
Got it. That's great. So one parting question here. John's asking, what's the future of reporting in TFS?
Yeah. I would just say it's going to get better.
Okay.
So we know that we haven't sort of turned the dial much in reporting in past releases. You're seeing us really just get started with that, with the lightweight charting stuff that we're doing in 2013, and I think just hang on because we're gonna start doing a lot more here.
I think we could say that one of our goals is that it's going to be super simple to create the most charts. Just like you pick the data, pick a visualization, you pin it, you're done. You don't have to think about reporting. It's just that fluid. And then we're going to provide a powerful way to still get the data that do all the kinds of pivoting and everything that you want to do, that will still be available also.
That's great. I mean, that's certainly true because there's so much value by having this integrated system within ALM. The easier we can make it to get those insights right back out of the system, the better for everyone.
Right.
So Greg, Aaron, thanks for being on the show. I know you guys, we know you've got a long backlog, so I'm not going to hold you back from it. You can go get back to work. And in just a few minutes, we'll be back on Channel 9 Live with Robert Green talking to the Windows 8.1 development team. We'll see you right here. Thank you.